What was the comment you remember right now you see in your mind that affected you the most in the last 8 to 10 years?
The comment that changed my whole career trajectory was...
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
American author Harriet Jackson Brown Jr. once said, "Live so that when your children think of fairness, caring, and integrity, they think of you." And English novelist Terry Pratchett wrote, "It's still magic, even if you know how it's done." Welcome to the School of Greatness. My guest today knows what it takes to share the joy of magic and illusions through a digital medium empire that he's built. Many of you might know Zach King from his early days on YouTube, sharing advanced tutorials on filmmaking techniques and mastering visual effects. Or you might know him from Vine, using a six-second platform to inspire wonder and awe in millions of people with his sharp editing skills and visual gags. Or more recently, from his viral TikTok videos where he takes practical effects to the next level to create mind-blowing illusions. Zach is a filmmaker with over 8 million subscribers on YouTube, 50 million followers and growing on TikTok, and hundreds of millions of views across all platforms. And in this episode, we talk about how to keep yourself focused on your creative vision as a creator, where to start as a content creator today with all the noise, what's happening, all the different platforms. Where do you begin? How do you grow your platforms? The life lessons Zach has learned from his wife and kids, the YouTube comment that changed the course of Zach's life forever, the importance of finding your specific niche, especially when you're starting out, Zach's passion for family life, foster care, and adoption, and the first steps you can take to become a foster parent. That and so much more. I am so excited. Zach has got such a big heart. I aspire to be as talented as him one day. If you're enjoying this, please share it with someone who needs to hear it. And a quick reminder, if this is your first time here, click that subscribe button over on the School of Greatness on Apple Podcast, as well as give us a rating and review. Okay, after a quick message, the one and only Zach King.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. Super excited for our guest today. The legendary Zach King is in the house.
My dude, man. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you, brother.
It's good to be here.
So excited. We were just talking off camera about how I discovered you on Vine 7, 8 years ago, whenever that was.
The Vine days. Those were good days.
And I think everyone kind of discovered you then who was on the internet. Mm-hmm. But then I remember you kind of went away, at least in my perspective.
Yep.
When Vine went away, I remember almost like maybe it was a year or 2 years ago, seeing people say, when your content came back, people saying, isn't that the Vine guy? It's almost like you went away, at least in my perspective, but you were still not gone, but it just seems like you weren't as mainstream awareness for maybe a couple years. Yep. Is that true, or is that just my perspective?
I didn't go away, but it's kind of that, the syndrome of you get so popular, it's hard to top that, and then it's only downhill from there for a little bit. Right. What I found having a career on the internet, it's ups and downs because you know me from Vine, but there'll be people watching this who know me from YouTube. It's 12 years ago when I created my first YouTube account and I was teaching filmmaking. That, and then that had to die, and to this day, there's never been a video on that YouTube channel. So there's still an audience that's like, where'd that dude go?
Interesting.
And then the recent uptick has been with TikTok, which is interesting. And it was kind of a little bit like you question in the back of your mind as you're creating, whether it's, I imagine artists have this, filmmakers definitely have it, like you're as great as your last work. And as Vine went away, I was still doing grinding on YouTube and making stuff every day with my team.
Really?
But you know, it just didn't hit the same as Vine. It was a different platform.
It wasn't going as viral.
Even though it was going as viral, like people, you never know if it was like a repost, people just, it wasn't the talk of the town, which was what Vine was.
It wasn't like culture. Vine was like, this is happening
in culture.
And TikTok is like, this is what's happening in culture. Everyone knows like the dances. Everyone knows the songs. Everyone knows the magic, right?
And it was kind of a little bit exciting to see that uptick on TikTok once again, because it was kind of like, you're like telling yourself, like, I'm relevant again. Like, not that you weren't relevant, but you just kind of had confidence that what you were making was evergreen. And now that I've seen that up and down, you know, three times with YouTube, Vine, and TikTok, and even other platforms like Instagram. There was a time when we were one of the top three creators right behind Taylor Swift in 1 year.
When was
this? In
terms
of video views. That was 2014 or 15, the first year that they had, first 2 years they had their video feature. Because we were one of the first ones to jump on. Everyone was still using it for, you know, pictures of their food or their dogs or whatever. And
you were coming off Vine high, and you were like, let's go create here.
Yeah, well, I was coming off that, and it was like, Vine was 6.2 seconds or whatever. And then Instagram, when they launched, it was 15.
Seconds. You're like, give me 15 seconds.
Double. At this rate, we're going to be making feature films in 8 years if we double the length every, you know, 2 years.
Yeah.
So, we are continuing to... It's never been about the follower count, though. I think there was a period where, and it was... If you actually measure, I think it was between like 1 and 7 million followers on Instagram. That was the most fun rush. It was like you would check the social blade or the graphs and it'd be like 40,000 followers today. No way, 70,000, 120,000. And then around 7 million, it's kind of just became it can't be about this because then you're going to pivot the content and you're going to be creating stuff for the audience and you can lose yourself and your own voice and your creativity in that. And I think your whole... fire for creating can die because you're all of a sudden serving this machine and the audience feels like a beast in a way to continue to feed it and keep it growing.
How do you keep yourself focused on your vision, your creative process, the artistry of it as opposed to numbers, following growth, engagement?
I think I'm in a lucky place where I don't have to worry about growth. And it's, you know, even if you look at that number metric of growing 1 to 7 million followers, like you kind of tap out in terms of even the brand deal size at 7 million. Like brands aren't there to, they don't need somebody with 50 million. If you have 7 million, it's probably like the same engagement rate. It's just an extra bonus. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't a reason to continue to grow. It's all about making the next video is better or more exciting or a better story or crafted in a more unique way. And the thing that got me into filmmaking years ago was watching Spielberg. Like I went to film school knowing that I wanted to try to make movies like Steven Spielberg or George Lucas. It was these giant blockbusters, but all of them had a theme of practicality where, you know, you look at those old behind the scenes and they have the real dinosaur head there. Like the Jaws shark, which gave them a ton of headaches, but like that made the iconicness of that film. It wasn't like a CG or claymation.
You're still talking about it 20, 30 years later.
Yeah, because they were breaking ground with what they're doing practically. And so the fun of filmmaking to me isn't showing up on set and having green screens and like this fake little tennis ball to look at for eyeline. It's actually having some of the things there. And that's what gets me up in the morning now. It's like, how can I make this video 100% practical? What if there was zero editing? Because I've known for a lot of my digital trickery, but my favorite stuff is like, I just did a video with my kids and we were thinking of it, like what I make blanket forts with my kids all the time. And I was like, wouldn't it be sweet? Almost like a Narnia thing where you go through and you could, go through.
It's really cool.
Did you see the behind the scenes?
No, so, I don't think I have.
I'll show you later, but it's one of my favorite things. I've never posted behind the scenes. Not a magician, but I live by the code
that
of like.
That would crush on TikTok.
It did.
The behind the scenes.
So we showed the behind the scenes because it was 100% practical, zero editing, where we go through the tent and I lift up the back blanket and we're in a forest. And I see a million theories when we post a video up on the forums of Reddit.
Here's what happened.
It was some jump cut crazy thing where he got all two of his kids, who are, by the way, under 3 years old, like, to line up in the same position when they went to a mountain. And it was like, no, we had a set and the doors opened up when the camera was inside the tent. You just didn't mentally realize it. The doors open up and we built the set on top of a mountaintop.
Shut up.
And so
the set is in a mountain.
So there's no editing. Yeah, it's just like the most simple explanation. But it's beautiful to me because the problem that we were solving is, how do we make this real? Like, it would actually be too hard to edit that video.
Wow.
And so I get a kick out of whether it's like Fred Astaire did a decades ago a tap dance number, and he was dancing on the walls. Like, he walks up, dances on the ceiling, and is hanging around in impossible ways. And, you know, they used a rotating room just like they used in Inception.
Mm.
And so we were like, well, to do that, like, we could walk up a wall and someone could hold me in a green screen suit. It would just look funny and kind of be a cheap way to do it. So we figured out how to build a rotating room so that we could, you know, do those moves and be, I always want to be like Spider-Man as a kid. And so, like, that was the video concept we ended up doing.
Wow.
But
how much do these productions cost to build some of these sets?
That's where the brand deal money comes in to pay for it. We're like, you know, I mean, building a rotating room is incredibly expensive. It can be in the six figures to build something like that. But it's worth the payoff just because those videos to me last for a long time.
They're evergreen. They're
evergreen until the day I die. Like, kids will probably always want to be Spider-Man and walk on a wall, you know, or.
And they'll reference your video of that, like you're referencing Jaws.
Maybe. I reference a lot of stuff from Charlie Chaplin. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, oh, you've created this new style. But there's a lot. George Méliès was a filmmaker in the early 1900s. He was doing jump cuts. I watch a lot of his stuff often, which are funny because they're reminiscent of vines. They're sometimes 6 seconds long. And they would be played in Nickelodeons, which were like these little machines. You put a quarter in or a nickel. For 5 cents, you could watch this. It was like up to literally 7 seconds. A little, like, you'd watch somebody punch somebody, or like you'd watch a person sneeze. That was like Edison's first films. And it seems so trivial, but in George's, he was doing jump cuts. He would like go like this, and then a piano would appear.
Right.
And like, people back then were blown away, like, what? Because it all looked choppy, so you could almost barely see the jump cut. But I always wonder what if Charlie Chaplin were alive today, or some of those early filmmakers who had such primitive technology, what they would be doing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they. I don't know if they would. I feel like they'd be more Oscar filmmakers,
right?
But maybe they'd be down to make some TikToks.
TikToks. What is the biggest fear you have as a creator right now? You've got, I think it's over 80 million followers across platforms. You've got billions and billions of views. What's the fear? Is it that I'm not going to be as good as my last video? That I'm not going to stay relevant? That I'll lose myself in all this? What is it for you?
You know, it's interesting. As I see my fears come out in the comments. And I know it's a real fear when it pings me. So, I don't spend a lot of time in comments anymore.
When it triggers you.
When it triggers me. And I'll read a comment, I'll say, this guy's not relevant anymore. And I'll go, oh, ooh. That's a real, like, okay, I must actually believe that's a fear of mine. If it pings me, another one that happens is when people say, when are you going to make your next thing? And I'm always fearful of, like, I'm not going to be able to, not that it's a pivot, but make something longer. What if it's actually a lack of ability to go beyond 15 seconds. You know, what if I can't go a full hour and a half, which has been my dream, which I've been telling people since I was a kid growing up making movies. And so now the weight of it, which isn't right, but for many years I put it on me, like, I need to fulfill that and succeed in that, because I've got my whole hometown family rooting for, like, we're excited about your TikToks, but like, let us know when you make a film, you know?
Oh,
like,
man.
And so being content is something I'm working towards.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most content ever, where are you at right now?
In terms of family life, fully content.
Yeah.
I love where I'm at. With work, I always want to push it. So it's not that I'm not content, but I'm ambitious to see if I could do something else.
You're happy, just not satisfied.
There is satisfaction with the work. When we post, it feels great to have finished something and made something, because there is an energy I get and a lot of my team gets from finishing, whether it's a video, any kind of project. It feels great to kind of look back at the process, and it's not as difficult as a birth that I saw my wife go through, but it is a similar process where you created something from kind of nothing, like just
your
an
imagination.
Idea. Yeah, and used resources or creativity along the way to get that out to become something that millions of people can watch. That's kind of a weird process to think about, that in a way that it is magical that you're creating that physical experience, and hopefully it can have an emotional experience when people watch it, whether it's adding wonder or inspiration in their lives.
Yeah.
But so I'm contentness. I don't know.
Where are you at there in career wise then? 1 to 10.
I'm gonna give it a 7.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. Like there's a lot more ambition there. I don't know where that line.
So you've never done a full hour and a half film yet?
Not even close. If you add them up, well over that. Right. It's like a director's length, three and a half movie.
What would the film be if you could do any film?
Well, that's why I don't know. I don't know what the story is. I want it to be, I used to have this thing in film school. I was like, well, the first film I do is gonna be the best thing ever. It's gonna be the Damien Chazelle La La Land that wins an Oscar, the first, super jealous of that guy's talent.
He's amazing.
But when I look at, I need to take that pressure off myself. And over the years, I've learned to do that. That pressure has never been healthy for what I'm producing and who I am as a person. And so I know there's a long form story in there. I don't know what it is because I'm looking for it. And that's just allowing the curiosity to continue to ask questions. Like, I think it'll have something to actually maybe. I loved documentaries growing up, but I never thought I'd make one. I used to actually say, like, I don't know, I don't want to make a documentary. But I don't know, I love the idea of, like, exploring a topic deeper and immersing myself in that for a couple years. But I also don't have those projects take a lot of time.
We did a documentary, it took 2.5 years of my life. It's a lot of money. We haven't made any money from it. And we haven't, like, it's just hard. It's more of a creative process of love.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's why it has to be that, because I love the... sometimes I'll make these videos, especially for YouTube, that'll be 5 minutes, and that's a lot of energy that goes into a 5-minute piece. Mm-hmm. But when we hit publish, it feels good to have to be at peace. And a couple times we've said this, where it's like, if this literally gets 10,000 views, it's okay. Like, I'm proud of what we're putting out there, and because I learned so much in the process of making that mm-hmm. it's not even about seeing the response to it. It's like it's done once it's published. That whole journey. And there's longer form story in there. Don't know what it is yet.
I feel like a documentary on magic as a whole.
Yes.
Like studying great magicians.
And that fascinates
and then you
me.
Kind of throwing in your spin and twist as a host kind of storyteller could be interesting.
Yeah, but I think you're hitting on some strings there. That's where my curiosity goes at night. I'll Google and there's all these rivalries of magicians and selling the secrets and these shows that,
the dark side of magic. Ooh, I like that title.
It could be a catchy title. It could be on some co-producer.
Exactly. Now, I like to challenge people when they come on the show who have already achieved big things, but they have something missing. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like the film is something that you would regret not putting out in the world over the next 5 to 10 years. Is that right?
Before I die.
Before you die.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm going to be making what I'm known for now, this idea of magic. And... it's very, magic is very on the nose, not a magician. And I try to say that a lot too.
Can't do any card tricks.
Well, it's partly an insecurity, but also it's just magicians get mad. They're like, well, you're not a magician because you didn't do, I did magic growing up, but I know it's a totally different skill. So to me, it deserves a different title. But I think to the audience, they see the wonder, that same wonder of they would see in a magic show, and they don't care the process, whether it was edited or you practiced the actual card sleight of hand or whatever the trick is, they just know the experience brought them to that. It took them out of body, and for even 3 seconds, they spiritually believe that magic was possible. And kids today don't really care about how it was done, if it was edited or produced on stage. And so that's why people call it magic. And but when I meet people like David Blaine, it's like they can still get you to that spiritual place.
Yeah.
In with their cardistry or with their tricks or their stunts in person, and that's somewhere I'll never get to. You have to watch my stuff. I have to show you a video,
For sure. So. But that's still magic. You create awe and wonder in those moments.
Yeah.
For people like, wow, how did he do that?
Yeah.
So you're a magician in your own right.
There was a big problem for me was still when kids come up And it happened years ago too, when Vine was first getting popular, they'd be teenagers and they'd want to see a magic trick. And
like, there's a video
it
watch.
It was like the biggest disappointment. It was as if I told them the behind the scenes of Disneyland or something and said like, because this happened to me, I went to shoot at one of the parks and you know I saw the cast members like take off the Soli head and I was like distraught. Like,
don't show me this.
I want to be on the other side of Disneyland. But I would tell them, like, no, it's this whole process, and I was breaking it down, and they'd kind of walk away, like, shoulders. They'd get the photo, but, like, they'd walk away bummed.
It's almost like you should learn one coin trick that you can always do and just have something simple.
Yeah, so I ended up, for the little kids, like, and a lot of kids, I had kids cry. I would tell them, you know, oh, it's this whole editing thing, and you can do it, too, and they didn't care. Like, they were just bummed. And we ended up making a kid's book just to solve that problem because we wanted to hand them something because I couldn't deliver that experience. And so we did like an AR book, which is cool because you could scan it and all the art came alive.
That's cool.
But it was like the backstory to how this kid was magical and where the magic came from. And so that's been my thing. I keep them in my car or in my backpack when I walk around just to like, so when the kids are like, see a magic trick, I'm like, check out what this AR app can do on my book.
That's cool. I saw that on your website. Where can parents get books for their kids?
You can find it on Amazon or, you know, wherever books are sold, Target.
Just type Zach King. Is it Zach King Comics or what is it, Zach King?
Look up Zach King and it'll pop like store. Book and it'll come up.
I'm curious about how many views do you think you have total in all your videos in the last 10 years?
A couple billion. Yeah, we've never tallied them, but.
Isn't it interesting? I think it's probably more than that. With all like TikTok and Vine and everything there, but isn't it interesting that you're probably one of the most watched filmmakers of all time who didn't get into film school?
It's pretty crazy.
Isn't that interesting?
I have a theory why I didn't get into film school as of recent. I remember I talked to a friend who applied to the same film school and I was like, can I see the application? Like, I don't remember it. And it was like 10 pages of essays and then submit your DVD. And as I was going through it, I was like, I don't remember writing essays. And I'm pretty sure because I remember filling out there was essays and I hated writing growing up.
I hated
up.
Too.
I'm not dyslexic, but I feel like I'm on the border of it where I just can't, I don't like it, I'm bad at it. I only have like one word to describe things, which is like beautiful. And
awesome.
That's it. Yeah. And then but I was looking, I was like, I bet I didn't write any essays. I bet I just wrote like a sentence for each answer. Like, why do you want to make movies? I love movies. Like, that's all I do. And I bet that was part of the reason I didn't get in. But yeah, I mean, that was a bummer for me because I grew up, I was one of those people, same as I know when you talk to Liz Gilbert, she said it, like, she knew her passion from early age. And I was that way. I resonated with that. Where like 7 years old, camera goes in my hands. I'm like, viewfinder, I'm a director. I can do this. This is fun. I want to do this rest of my life. Found it. And so going to film school and having the application denied, it was the biggest bummer. It was like, because I knew from such a young age,
this
that was where I was going. I was going
to
go to LA and make movies. And
you're from Portland, right?
I'm from Portland, Oregon. Grew up on a little farm area and drove down anyway. And I went to Biola. And so they still had general ed. I could take math, science. I could be at the school.
So you got into school.
I got into school. And I lived across who are now some of my best friends on the dorm, other filmmakers. And I got to know, I was like, what assignments are you doing? So I actually did a lot of my assignments like a year earlier because I just kind of did it with them, but I wasn't in the class.
Wow.
And I had started, I wanted to reapply. I got denied for like the winter term. You could, like, there's a last chance application. Didn't get that. And so I ended up sitting in the back of the classes because... and I guess this is a hack for school today. Like, I think you could sit in the back of class and teachers will never ask if you're enrolled.
Right.
So I sat in the back of classes and got the teacher signature to like get added to that class. And I would just sit and learn. And after 4 years, they were like giving out the diplomas and they were like, oh, why do you have all these units for film? Like, we only see you as a general ed student or whatever. And I was like, I was a film major. It must be a mistake. And they wrote me the
diploma. No way.
Yeah.
So you never became a film major till the very end.
Until the very last week of senior year before I was going to walk and they were going to give me the graduation thing. So that's a hack for people who want to go to college and get the, I don't know. I can't guarantee that'll work.
So you never actually still got admitted into film school, even all the way through. You just graduated from film school.
I graduated from film school.
Wow. That's interesting.
But, you know, got the same experience. And for me, film school is all, I get asked all the time, is it like, do you recommend film school? What if I have to go in a bunch of debt? Because you could also buy, if you've heard arguments of like, I could buy a whole studio for $200,000 education price. and go out to LA and move there and try it for 3 years. And that's also a great option. Yeah. So for me, it was about meeting people. I mean, one, I met my wife at the university, so worth the tuition there. But
for
the film experience, it's if you're not motivated to get out and meet people and network and go jump on projects or have people jump on your projects, film school is a great place for people to kind of be that extra push.
To be thrown into it, yeah. When was the time you doubted yourself the most since you graduated film school to now?
Along the way, doing the business part of my work. So business, I didn't do business school. My dad was an entrepreneur, so I watched and gleaned what I could from him. But for me, that's the self-doubt. Like I knew my, in terms of the filmmaking craft, I know what I enjoy seeing and the tweaks that can be made there. But for the business, it's always a self-doubt along the way of like, oh, is that the right call? Or the worst, so it's
because— Like doing a business deal, charging for something, like what—
In the beginning, that's always, you're awkward and you're learning that. But no, it's probably more that now I have 15 people on my team and it's fluctuated over the years, but it's making the business decision of, do we need to downsize now? Or do we need to scale up now? Or is that too risky? Or should I take a loan? Or like, are we going to be out? Like, what if we don't, what if for some reason people don't hire influencers in a year from now? Like, where are all these families going to be? And a part of that is I've taken too much over the years on myself. And part of that is just, there's a natural system of life that happens and people will be okay if you know, they'll figure out something. So it's taking a little pressure of myself there, but there's always a self-doubt. It's like, I wasn't trained in this. Like, is this the right, whatever business, it could be not really about the deals, but just more about how the business operates. Like, what if we need to diversify? You know, you have different coaches come in and they're like, well, I see you only do one thing. Like, you need to have 8 things that bring in revenue and this one thing, but we're all in on this one thing. You know, for the most part, there's like some different revenue streams, but it's those things that I question.
Yeah, making those decisions, what routes to go down, who to hire, all that stuff, right?
Yep.
What was the comment you remember right now you see in your mind that affected you the most in the last 8 to 10 years?
Well, in a positive way, there's a comment that really changed my career. Like, I should go back and, I don't think I'll remember which one it was because there were several of these comments along the way, but back when I started YouTube, I was making tutorials, so I was teaching people. Yeah. I had just started the films, going into film school, and so I was teaching what I was learning for editing and putting that out there. It was really nerdy. I was screen recording my screen and posting, pretty much editing down the ums and putting it on YouTube. And the comment that changed my whole career trajectory was, hey, you should show us with these, like a short film, the demo. Like, so if you're teaching lightsabers, like, show us it. Make a 2-minute short film about with lightsabers and then like break it down. Because they wanted entertainment. It was also like probably just stale content.
Yeah.
And
they weren't just how to. They wanted like, show me the end result then break it down.
Yeah. And it was those comments. And I literally read it and was like, one night in my dorm, I was like, oh, I could totally do that. Like, I'm working on a lightsaber thing for next week. I was going to break down like a Star Wars thing and how you could do it yourself. And I was like, the demo film would be like 2 kittens. My buddy had just adopted kittens with his girlfriend, and that was fresh on my mind. And I was like, oh, well, if we had them play and just like add it in and film them for like a night, it'd make a funny short. It'd be stupid, you know?
Right.
It's one of those ideas you don't think about, and you don't give yourself notes. It's just like, let's go do it. And we shot it that night. I posted the tutorial a couple days later and had kind of made it its own teaser, like just posted
the video.
Jedi Kittens by itself. I just called it Jedi
on
Kittens. Yeah. It was 45 seconds long. And I think I even in the caption was just like, tutorial coming next week or whatever. But little did I know, like, the viral potential that YouTube, it was kind of, YouTube back then was a little bit like TikTok now, where you just, if you posted stuff every 20, it might go viral.
Right.
And viral would be 1 million views. And that was actually, it's oversaturated now. There's been a lot of inflation.
Yeah.
But back then, 1 million views was like a lot of
views.
And you could get 100,000 subscribers from that. It was like a crazy conversion rate. People were just signing up for the site. And it was on the news, and the video, my parents called me, and I had been asleep because I stayed up all night to edit that video, and I just posted it, skipped my classes, and went to sleep. My parents were like, you were on Good Morning America. They just played your video. And
you had no clue.
And they're like, did they pay you for that? And I was like, no, like, well, I don't know. And so it was just thrown into that whole world. And it wasn't, there was a few people ahead of me doing it. The first wave of YouTube creators, whether it was, I mean, I remember early days where it was Smosh, iJustine, Freddie Wong.
iJustine was crushing,
Incredible creators who were well beyond, like, they paved the way for figuring out what this looks like. And it kind of started gleaning from them and like figuring out like, oh, so I should post every week, I guess, every Friday. And so that was my schedule throughout all of college is, wow, let's do tutorials during the week and then Friday. And over time, by that second, third year, it turned from, oh, the tutorials are kind of like, people are now confused because there's like a million, there's a half a million people here watching for the short films. And every time I post a tutorial, they're unsubscribing or they're just like, what is this? So it evolved pretty quickly. And then by the time I was graduating film school, you know, my peers, that's, I think, another time I had a little bit of question or self-doubt where it's, hey, 95% of my peers are going to go into Hollywood and do PA work. They're going to be screenwriters. They're going to work their way up for 15 years and become directors. I might get left behind here because I'm doing this weird thing where my parents were really supportive and they actually called it out. Like, hey, this is unique. Like, just go with it. See, what is a year or two of failing on this YouTube site and just try it out. And also they're like, your living is cheap. It's like $400 a month in LA. Right. Like, just go do it.
And who pays $400 a month in LA?
Orange County. Orange County rates over the line.
Yeah.
So I ended up committing to like, I'm going to do YouTube. I'm going to go hard and
go for a year or two, see how it goes.
Yeah. See, and then I hopefully can catch up to where my friends are and who were out ahead of me in LA. And I continued to do that. And slowly it turned into, you know, brand. I hadn't been barely exposed to a brand deal and did a few of those. And I was like, I can't even do these. Like I need to hire people to help me. So slowly hired on staff. And then Vine took off and that was a different beast. I remember my YouTube channel went from 500,000 subscribers to 1,000,000 pretty much in like 3 months. And Vine had gone to 2 million followers in just a couple, in about less than a year. So it was a different level of exposure. And you could feel it too when there'd be like one person a week who'd come up to me in the store from YouTube. But once Vine happened, it was everybody in the store.
Really?
The checkout lady, it'd be everybody. And that
she became
was
like famous in like a month.
But Vine was it's kind of compared to TikTok, I think, a little bit, but it's hard to know where they know me from at this point.
Right.
But Vine was the overnight, you could feel the difference in person. And that was
you go to the store, you walk down the street, and somebody's like, oh.
Yeah, that was a weird experience.
How did you not let that get to your head? Or did it get to your head for a while and you had to learn how to humble yourself in a way?
Well, I'm naturally an introvert. I love being by myself. So it's really uncomfortable. Not anymore, but in the beginning when people come up, like, I don't know how to have conversation. Like, I edit by myself for 12 hours a day. I work through the night. And I had a girlfriend at that time who ended up, I became engaged and we got married. But she went through that whole journey and she'd be the person who talked. She's like so bubbly and she loves talking to people. That's her. She loves figuring out like, who's in the room and what are their needs? And like, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And so she was like, whenever I had her, I was comfortable. It was like, hey, this is Rachel. Like, carry on the conversation here.
I'll take a photo of you guys talking.
Yeah. So, it was different. And I think it's funny when you can see that, where you mentioned in the beginning, the relevance went down people, it kind of felt like I wasn't around posting stuff.
After Vine went away,
that
right?
That just went to show the power that Vine, it was just a different level. And
crazy.
You see it rise again with TikTok. It was actually like less people did recognize me on Vine after these years had died, died years ago. And TikTok came around and people would start, you notice when the title changes, they're like, first you're the Viner, then you're the ex-Viner, and now you're the, now it's
TikTok
like,
guy.
Some kids only know me from TikTok.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Man, did you have a period where you were like feeling less relevant and you felt insecure about that?
Not insecure from in my soul, but insecure from a business perspective, wondering, ooh, was I over leveraged in Vine? And now will advertisers really come for YouTube brand sponsorships or for the main revenues that we support the business? That's where I always questioned it. And that goes a little bit in line with my questioning the business skills that I've developed over the years. It's like, oh yeah, you can't be over leveraged in one thing.
Diversifying more, yeah.
Yeah, and it turns out that fear wasn't even valid. There was a lot more, I think, as people, filmmakers especially photographers build their brands online, you should go hard in these apps. You know,
should leverage it.
Absolutely.
Go all in. If TikTok is working for you, go all in on one thing.
Absolutely.
And then try to diversify later, right?
Diversify as you go if you can, but yeah. it's if if you're really thinking of diversification from the beginning, you're going to have less focus on that one thing. Mm-hmm. And I told one of my buddies early on, like, go hard on TikTok. And he has a couple million followers now. But, you know, a lot of my other friends who I said the same thing to, they were like, well, as I'm building this, I got to also do a podcast. And I got to do, and they ended up doing the kind of half-assing the podcast. And like
half-assed with everything.
Yeah. And then they never grew on TikTok because they didn't. Also, you need to learn the culture of TikTok and how to speak the language or see what's trending. And really, is it too late to hop on that? Or is it funny? And does it fit? Do I jive with that? And can it feel in my style as well? So,
what's your vision of TikTok moving forward? If someone's listening or watching, should they go on TikTok now all in if they're a creator, if they want to create content, or is it too late?
I would be so overwhelmed if I was a creator starting now. I'm so thankful that I was able to start when I did, when there was, you know, it's kind of like going in real estate. You're one of the first ones there and you can build a bigger property and kind of, and then along the way, I think TikTok is still, if you look at it from a big picture, there's massive exposure you can get. I still have friends who, my sister posted a video the other day and it was for her graduating and it got a couple hundred thousand, not because I never, my audience says no, you know, she has an account. It's not from me. It just, the algorithm is so powerful. If it's funny or good or hits with people, it works. So over all the platforms, TikTok still is giving the best exposure. Yeah. You got to go there. Also, you got to Instagram Reels, brand new feature. You know, they're going to be giving like probably 70% of their real estate for that explore page to Reels. So jump on that.
Yeah.
But it's YouTube is the scary one. Like, I don't know where I would start. Like,
so hard, man. Yeah, we're just consistent. We're finally starting to really grow now. I think we're like 700 something thousand subscribers. Mm-hmm. And I think we had 3.5 million views this month in terms of like, but we have an hour long content or an hour and a half long content. Yeah. And so it doesn't go as viral in some stuff, but we finally started to figure out a process and a system where it's now growing at a nice rate. But it's like, I've been on there for years doing it.
But you know? The thing that you're doing, and I love it. And I'm telling people a similar thing, like, you're coming from a place of giving.
Yeah.
Like, you're giving, you get, like, it's, you're called a school of greatness for a reason. Like, people could literally get an education watching your stuff. And that's so valuable. It's in depth. And I always tell, like, that's the place I would start, is going back to almost my filmmaking.
How to.
How to. Like, teaching a niche and really giving value and for free. And then you can, and people, and I paid through film school by selling my like DVD courses. I was manufacturing these 2-disc things that were 8 hours long on top of my, I wasn't packaging like my YouTube tutorials. I was making like new training and selling it every quarter.
Cut Pro trainings?
Yeah, like different, yeah, motion graphics softwares or different special effects packs. It was a great business. And that was gonna be my fallback. If YouTube failed, I was gonna go back to that because that was working great.
Yeah.
And it's just, but providing value was the simplest business model for it. And that still works.
Still works. Creating content that helps someone solve a problem. We have a very similar story in the fact that I got started in 2008, 2009, and 10.
Yep.
Broke as a joke. I was playing professional football, making $250 a week. So it wasn't really professional in the sense of like making a lot of money. Got injured, had to kind of recreate my identity. And I got on LinkedIn to try to find a job. Hmm. And I started spending all this time on LinkedIn. And after 6 months, people were like, hey, can you show me what you're doing on LinkedIn? And so by me learning a skill, I started teaching people one-on-one, kind of like with you, teaching one-on-one. Then I ended up creating a book and course around LinkedIn, and I started making money around it. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I went all in on that, become known for that one thing of just trying to help people. And then I evolved it into, well, what do I really want to create? I want to do more inspirational stuff. But that's what got me started, just like teaching got you started. You created a course.
Yep. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of take a misstep, is when they're creating their accounts. I see, I have a lot of friends either trying to break into it and they go too big. They try
too broad.
They try to hit everybody. Yeah. And in doing that, it obviously hits nobody or very few people. And so the niche, I mean, you were literally teaching LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I
was teaching, it wasn't social media.
Yeah, no, you like,
it was one platform.
Go more narrow, especially now. And then you'll figure out from your audience, like that mix of what you love doing, and then it'll naturally be coming out in the comments. They'll be like, LinkedIn, what about Pinterest? I really need to trend on SEO on Pinterest. Like, and then if you love it, you start
evolve it.
Like, yeah.
Because the people that are working on TikTok that I'm inspired by, they're teaching something specific. They're not teaching photography. They're teaching like iPhone photography. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the hidden things on your iPhone to make your photos better?
Yep.
Not like, here's how to be a great photographer.
Right.
The more specific you can go on, specifically TikTok or any platform, the bigger you can grow. And I think that's important for people to know. especially starting out. I love that you started teaching, then you started creating, and then that became your business model.
Yep.
You also are, we have a similar story in the fact that my dad had 7 exchange students live with us when I was a kid. So from 5 years old to about 12, we had 7 people from around the world come and live with us. So we kind of fostered part-time, 6 months at a time.
Was that all at once or over the years?
Over the years. Okay. Yeah, like every year it'd be like a new exchange student who was like their senior year coming in small town Ohio. And so I learned about culture from people from Brazil and Japan and Germany France. Cool. And I would learn the language and experience it. And you started getting into the foster care movement years ago, but you haven't adopted, or you fostered first,
we
and
fostered
then you adopted.
First. Yep. So my wife was a social worker, and she was working a desk job at a social work, at an agency where they place foster kids and they do adopted kids too. Sometimes that means kids, you know, are on straight track to adoption, or they need to go through the foster care system and then figure out if they're going home or if they're going to be adopted. And as she was doing that desk job, this is right around the time Vine was kicking up for me too. So early on in marriage, we were traveling everywhere together, and then she had her job, and you know, she felt like while she enjoyed helping get kids placed, she wasn't really in the field. She wanted the hands-on, and she wanted to be wanted to be a mother, and so she wanted to feel like she was hands-on. We had just moved into a new home at the time, and to us it had an extra room, and we were like, oh, this is too much for us. Like,
right.
I at one point I had all my Legos in there, and it was because I'm a massive Lego like fan. It's almost embarrassing how many Legos I have, and I won't let my kids touch them to this day. It's like if they're on the shelf, like don't touch. You can play with these ones, which you know already broken. But I had all my Legos in there, and it just felt like, nah, I don't think I need that. And we're like, we could clear it out, and she could quit her job and then end up doing foster care, and we could try it out. We'll have one kiddo. She came from a family that was adopted. She was the only biological kid. There was 2 adopted kids. And I had, my youngest sister was adopted into my family.
From China, right?
From China. So we both had that experience of having siblings that were adopted. And we knew early on in dating, we knew and we talked about it like, hey, because I wanted to marry a girl that was going to do adoption and be open to that. And she was likewise with her spouse. So we connected on that. And this felt like, you know, a year into marriage, a great way to figure out if we could do foster care. I didn't know what that was. I thought it was
You're what, 24, 25, 20?
I was, 24.
Mm-hmm.
And,
You're still a kid in some ways.
I was still a kid, just start, you know, really just, my business was just picking up. I was just growing a team. And a lot of people would just think, oh, you're too busy, like do it later in your life. But for us, it was really a strong tug on our hearts. It felt like a mission that we needed to do. And we opened up that room. We had our first kiddo, and it was a baby. We signed up for 0 to 2, so you can pick ages.
Wow.
You can do, and it sounds a little strange, but you do go through an application of like, during this first, you know, next placement, do you want 0 to 2? Do you want 2 to 5? Or, and it's really based on what you think you can handle.
Mm-hmm.
So me and Rachel felt really guilty saying, I don't think we can handle, like we couldn't take on a mentally handicapped kid. I haven't been trained in that. Maybe in the future I could, but it takes extra care, probably not only just a full-time parent, but maybe a little bit more support. Yeah. And so you go through an application process and you go through training, and then literally the day you get signed up, and it's free to sign up, but you get a call and it's like, hey, you want to take in, you know, here's the baby, here's their story, here's a little bit of like how long we think they're going to be with you, and if it's going to go adoption or if it's going to go back to, they have like little pulses on the story. And you either say, yeah, I'm open, I can come drop off, or I'll pick up that day. So we got a call 4 days before we finished the application. Like, that's how much they
to
need.
To come pick up right then.
Baby, from the, it had been in the NICU, but
wow.
We went to go pick them up and had our first baby for 6 months. And so overnight.
Within a week.
Yeah, the process was 6 months to get certified, but like within 4 days of us finishing, it was like, 4 days before, they were like, we already know who you're going to have, because they have so many kiddos that they have to put in homes. And so we became parents overnight. And it was, we had a lot of friends tell us like, oh, so you didn't have biological, like this is your first kid. And it was like, we didn't have that 9-month window of like anticipation and going to the hospital and birthing and being taught how to do it. It was just
you're an instant dad.
Instant dad. There's a great movie, Instant Family, that with Mark Wahlberg, that shows, it's lighthearted, so because foster care is such a serious thing, it can be really heavy. That's a great film I recommend to people to watch and just get a sense of like what is involved. And their story is kind of intense because they had, I think, three kiddos at once, siblings.
Wow. So what is being a foster, so you fostered one child and then you ended up adopting?
One kiddo, and then they went home, our first kiddo went home to their family.
What is that like?
I've had so many friends with different experiences of it. There's a whole range of them. For us, it's obviously terribly, on one hand, bitter because you have raised this kid for 6 months and they are you're taking on the responsibility of parenthood. Like, we're calling ourselves mom and dad for their attachment. We don't want to be like a babysitter and they're getting half love or we're holding back love because they're getting the full, like, as if they are a child. And for that period, they are a child, our love. And so it's heartbreaking to give back. But at the same time, their story was really amazing. And I was so proud of their family because, you know, if someone has kids in the foster care system, most likely their parents have been in the foster care system and it goes down generations just because it's a rut that, you know, it's hard not to have judgment. But when I was, before I was educated about foster care, I had a lot of judgment. I was like, well, why can't you just kind of like fix yourself?
And
like,
take care of these kids.
Well, yeah. And like, they're humans and you're not taking, but they just weren't trained. Like it's not to give them too many outs, but this family went through the training. They did. I mean, it's hard work to get back on course from where their life was. Mm. And so we were celebrating them.
That's cool.
And that's the goal. Like, you want to be celebrating the birth parents the whole time. It's not easy to the whole process because there's just decisions that are made that you're like,
why'd you do this? Yeah.
Like, you were so close and now we had to go another 6 months and your kiddo needs to be with you. Like, you're the bio parent. That's probably what's best for them. But along the way, it's just like, you have so much grace for yourself, but also just the families.
Yeah.
Cause it's not easy for the parents to actually get there. There's a lot of work they have to do to get their kiddos back. And so our second kiddo, joined the family and we ended up, the story turned where he joined our family. Wow. And we were thrilled. Like, he was our son for the first 2 years that we had him. And the fact that he got to join our family was like forever son, like so cool.
How old was he when you joined?
So he was two when he was adopted.
Okay.
And
what's his name?
Mason.
And what has Mason taught you about being a better creator?
Kids are the most creative things in the world. Being a dad has changed my eyes and actually re-inspired a lot of them. I think you can see it in my work. When you see, if you were to go back and see when my kids were somewhere around the age of 1.5 or 2, so just about 1.5 years ago, I can track back that my work was more inspired, that the ideas were slightly better because, you know, I was on the ground with my kids. I'm every day on the ground when I get home at 5, looking in grass, looking for bugs, looking for ants, whatever that new thing is that week. Looking for toads was our whole winter experience. There was a pond near us that hatched, looks like thousands of toads. And we'd catch them, and to them, they were these scary, we had these stories going. And that's so fun. And kids, you can see their innocence, and you can see that it's really in the best creatives. There's no no yet. They haven't been told no. And, you know, I catch myself. I'm like, no, you can't cross the road. And instead of explaining, like, well, you can do anything, but here's why it's not safe to cross the road.
Mm-hmm. It's a yes and mentality.
But I'm always yelling, no, like, no, no, don't. Why do you have to touch the coffee thing? Like, why did you spill this morning we made espresso? Both my kids by the age of 1.5 have learned how to make me a full espresso. Besides putting the thing in and like turning it with the force that it needs, they can make and hit all the buttons and grind it and everything.
That's cool.
And that's our ritual in the morning, but he just spilled this morning. I'm like, no, like, why did you bang it on that thing? It's like, you know the process. And really, it's, I'm catching myself, so I don't want to be the no person. I want to be the expansive and teach him, sure, there's boundaries of life that you need to be safe for your own physical well-being. But other than that, like, anything should be possible for the kids as long as possible. I want to be there cheering them on and saying, yes, and how do we do that even better?
Do they watch your videos? What do they think of your work?
So I did a magic trick for them, just a simple coin trick early on. I think they were like 1.5 years or maybe 2 years old. And they started crying. It was too much to handle. It was like, where did it go? And well, I pulled it out of their ear after. you know, it's a classic, like, right. It's almost doing, like, I've done this one to them where I pull off their nose.
And they're, like, scared.
They're scared. So I stopped doing it for a little bit. They've seen a few of my videos when they're in, because Mason's old enough to know what a camera is, and he actually enjoys filming and taking photos. But I do show them the videos that they're in once in a while, because it'll, like, the camping video, just so that they can full circle know what we were doing, if they remember, like, oh, that's why we were on the mountain that day. Like, oh, we made a video. Cool.
That's cool.
But they have no idea the followers, and I don't know what raising kids in amongst fame will look like. So crazy, I'm gonna have to meet mentors that, you know, have done that successfully, and then take from them.
How old are they now?
3.5 and 2.5.
Wow. Yeah. So they fully don't understand it yet. Yeah. I'm assuming they're just trying to have fun.
You know what's weird is, and we've stopped putting them in videos because of this. People would come up to take pictures with them. Like I wouldn't be around. They'd see them in a store. We had one just a couple months ago. A kid came around in Target and was like, Mason? And no I was way. On the other edge of the, they didn't see me.
Another kid.
Yeah, another kid in their family. And the dad recognized him too. He's like, wait, is that me? And they were also probably like, why is he alone? But I was on the edge of the aisle and I could see him. But they're like, oh my gosh, it's Mason. Let's get a photo. And I was like, hello, like other
that's
parent,
weird.
You should know, like, to that's weird. Because the kid's like 3.5, but it made us like, oh, they're gonna they're aware of like people coming up to me and taking photos. Now people are asking them. So we're figuring that out. We're navigating. Like we've kind of gone the opposite of like, we're gonna take most, unless it's like such a cool concept and they're gonna watch us when they're older and just be proud of it.
Yeah.
Like, we're pretty much taking them out for a while until they can make the decision and we can guide them through what that looks like.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
do you
cool.
really wanna be in a video? Mm-hmm. This is could be some consequences long term.
Sure. Well, the video you did where it was on the mountain, it was kind of like seeing the back of them. So you weren't really seeing too much, which is pretty cool. What advice would you have to creators who are young creators that want to make a career out of this or want to try to make money out of this?
Yeah.
Should they focus on early on how to learn about business, or should they just focus on their craft and making great art?
It's focused on the part that they love the most. So, and it's not necessarily what they're going to be good at the most, because they can hone, but they can hone it. So for me, I'm not like, I have people around me who can help me with the business. If I really wanted to, I could hire a firm and I could plug and play with them really easily. Like, there's a lot of ways to find the thing that you're not good at, and it'll complement you even better, make you stronger. So I would focus on the craft, focus on the thing. What it could be business, but probably the people joining social media do have a knack for filmmaking or creating video.
Yeah.
And then showcasing, you know, what they're doing with that.
What's the mistake you see a lot of creators making? Especially right now, whether it be on TikTok or YouTube or any platform, what are they?
I mean, the really common one is people joining just to get famous or just to make money, or they know it's the cool, popular thing to do. Those are too shallow and those won't take you very far. And they'll lead you making decisions that, like, it's tough, because when I make a video, we know the things that could make it even better. But sometimes it's compromising things that are already part of who I am or what my brand stands for. Or it's jumping on a trend that just doesn't feel right, but it's so popular. It's like, I should do that one. I don't know, but it's
got an example. What's a recent thing that here's a trend I could have done, but I decided to go a different way because it was not aligned to my brand.
So there's one where a gal, and she's incredibly talented with, her face movements, and it's Bella Porch. And she
did one of those like bomb.
Yeah. And so it's got this, I love the creativity of it. It's amazing. And, you know, I'm thinking maybe there is a version that I could do.
It's the most watched video on TikTok, I think, right now, right?
And so on TikTok, if you use the sound, and it's a double whammy, because it's a popular sound, so that'll trend. But then there's the hashtag, there's her, if you take her account. There's just the fact that it's an effect, it's a face zoom.
Yep.
And so all these things
are compounds.
Yeah, it's compounding, and it's like, I need to do that. But I would be forcing myself to do it just for the sake of a trend, versus there's not a great, at least we haven't written one yet, a great magic trick. And our version of surprise and wonder that would pop out of there. Now, there could be. We could sit and really force it, but
I think you did a great one similar to this with, who's the singer?
Oh, Selena Gomez.
Yeah. You did something like that,
yes.
Where you did like a magazine and then she was there.
But that wasn't, and that was great because it wasn't a trend. It was just like, it was a natural idea. So like, we were just talking about, I think we had seen her on the cover of a Variety magazine. It was like, oh, we should work with Selena. You know, it'd be funny if I was a hairdresser and just like this girl came in and she was like, I want this look. And we were like, oh, we'll just put it over her face and it would transform. And that's kind of a natural, like that works. But forcing it into a trend is the thing that can get us way more views. But if it doesn't feel right over time, if we do it 20 times, the brand will feel different. It'll feel like
maybe a trend chaser,
yeah,
as opposed to an originator.
Yeah, and that's we're not. Our goal isn't even to originate trends. It's just to like put out some fresh ideas, and it's really for other. You know, our thing is if people are scrolling through the feed and they get a dose of 15 seconds of like magic that takes them back. You know, whether they're an adult, takes them back to like, oh, I like that feeling of seeing a magic show and that like anything's possible, and they take that somehow into their work that week or what they're doing. Like, that's awesome if they're just surprised for 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And take them out of their routine of just going through the feed.
Go ahead, sorry.
And same for kids, like for the first time, if they're seeing magic or they're seeing this wonder, that inspires them to maybe go make films. You know, we get sent clips all the time of kids who try these. I have a simple one, it's like a jump cut. Mm-hmm. And it's the one where you keep the camera on tripod, and I go like, whoosh, and then I freeze, and my friends bring another t-shirt and I throw it off. And it's like, you cut out the middle section and then there's your jump cut.
Yeah.
And we get so many videos from kids and families that like make these together. That's the fun part. It's like, if that inspires them to go from being a consumer of the content to being a creator of it, that's the goal. Cause I don't use social media myself. But I do get caught in whenever a new app.
You don't use social media yourself?
I don't use it for, it's too addicting for me. And so I've just gone off. And also, I just don't, text message is so practical. Like, that's all I need is just to ping my friend and say, like, are you coming or whatever, like, coordinate. I don't need to post a picture of my family or what I'm doing to, and maybe part of that is just, like, the numbers don't mean, they used to mean something to me, like, it would a buzz to get 1,000 likes on a Facebook post or whatever. But maybe it's hitting, when you hit 1 million, it's just, like, it's that 1 to 7 million range.
It's like, once you're tapped out.
Well, you just realize that's kind of, it's just so surface level.
Yeah.
But I don't use social, but TikTok is one where, like, I can see how addictive it is. I can be lost for hours.
I can
continue to scroll. And so the goal is, like, let's put something a little edifying in that feed for people and pull them out of it just for a second.
Yeah. I mean, that trend, I don't know if that's a trend or just a style of, like, the jump cut with the shirt and clothes. I feel like so many people do that now on TikTok.
Yeah.
Is that something you were doing many, many years ago?
No, I started that on Vine. That was a natural, like, when Vine, I love creative constraints, and that was one of the best things Vine gave me was, at the time I could make YouTube videos that went up for 2 hours long or whatever, and I was never going to do that, but when an app came around and said, hey, it's 6 seconds, like, you literally can't go over that, that was actually freeing. It was like, I need to consolidate what I'm going to do. I went back to my magic roots as a kid, and I was like, oh, I always loved how magicians would do this disappearing act, but I never understood the story, so let's just, like, beef up the story a little bit, kind of copy some of these same ideas of trick techniques and put it in 6 seconds. And slowly, you know, you learn, oh, well, it needs to be funnier. It needs to have a better beginning setup to get the ending. And you build that story arc even in 6 seconds.
What do you think is missing from your life? You've got one of the biggest creators in the world, some of the, you know, 80 million subscribers on all platforms, billions of views.
The biggest thing that I crave is time alone to really think whether it's coming back to like figuring out that longer term story, what, like, finding those moments. You know, I do have my writing time in there, but really to simmer on something, which is what, when I was on YouTube and Vine came around, it was a simmering moment. It was like, oh, I'm not doing anything. Like, I have, when you have free time, it's like, I might as well try this Vine app. And even with TikTok, like, we were just doing YouTube, but it was like, we should try TikTok. We were in that moment of simmering. And so it's the simmering period when you
don't have that time.
No, and it's a cause of wanting to do too much, or we just for the most of the year didn't have any work, and now we need to make up for it.
Now you have tons of opportunities.
And so the simmering time is gone. It kind of comes out of a time of, I think you've talked about this before. It's a post-season rest.
Yes.
From creating, like, we're creating all the time, every week, weekly, different pieces of content. You never stop. It's not. Even I think music artists can take breaks after their tour before they go into the label for the next recording. That's what it looks like from my perspective. It's probably not true. They're probably also creating all the time, but creating is you need a break. And that's what I kind of call that simmering time where you do nothing and you're not having to think of, you know, when I post my next video tomorrow, I'll then go into thinking about the next video, but I don't get a break. And so that's what I'm missing.
How strategic are you in planning out the next weeks, months of content? Do you have stuff filmed that's already banked for a month? Is it week by week we're coming up with new ideas? What's that process like?
Some ideas are, we leave space for a trend. There was actually one going on this week. It was it's kind of a silly one. I don't know if it's going to hit, but it's just a photo shoot with a ghost. And what people do is put a sheet over their head and put glasses on. And we're doing our a ghost is just so obvious for us. Like, oh, it's how you disappear. So we keep time for like a quick trend like that. Each week, like, we'll have a half day open for a shoot. The rest of it's really pre-planned for a couple weeks ahead. Or like we have most of our shoots for the rest of the year planned just because they're kind of bigger. They're like, we need to build a set.
Productions, yeah.
On a, like right now we're like, can we build a set in, probably not Antarctica, but that's like the dream. Because I won't say the idea because someone will it's a good one. But, you know, can we, for big stuff, whether it's like the David Blaine project, you just need months to prep that. But usually we're like 2 weeks out and in the can ready to go.
Mm-hmm. But 2 weeks ahead, you've already recorded.
2 weeks ahead, yeah,
you've got content for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks, and then, but it's always scary. Like if you're up to that point, it's like you're working. It's so frustrating working that week for the next week's thing.
Same thing with a podcast. We have 3 episodes a week come out, so we're always trying to get ahead to keep feeding the beast of like 3 times a week.
Yep.
But when you have a month ahead, it's like, okay, the producer's happy, the team's happier, we're less stressed.
Yep.
But what about when you do the trend stuff? And you said like a half day shoot. If you see a trend and you're like, okay, we have a half day window to shoot something, do you just make it up on the spot? Because some of this stuff takes like time and production and props to.
Yeah.
What's the quickest you can make a video in that actually has the magic element?
We could do it in a half day if we have kind of all hands on deck and we think of an example. Is there was a trend that came out like a year ago called the bottle cap challenge. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know how it started, but I saw a video of Jason Statham. That was the first one I saw, slow motion.
Kicking it.
Kick it off. And did you do one of those?
I wanted to, but I wasn't cool enough.
It was like too late?
It was too late.
Oh, bummer.
And when is it too late to get on a trend?
Well, it depends on the trend. Like some trends are technically, they go for a couple
weeks. Months, really?
Sometimes. But that one had a little bit of longevity.
Yeah. I remember seeing one with a guy who like used like his hand with like a sock over it and like took it off.
There were so many clever ones.
Puppet and stuff, yeah.
That's when we get the hunch that it'll be a trend. When you start seeing people take really clever twists and it just gives you a ton of ideas and you're like, okay, we'll skip most of those because people are going to do those. Like what's the one most people aren't going to be able to do, which is, you know, we do a lot of stuff that is very difficult to do. It takes time, so people kind of will never do those ones.
So what was that one like? What'd you do?
So the bottle cap challenge, I was like, well, what if, you know, I think we saw similar, like, oh, they're kicking it with their feet, but it's really their hand. But what if when I kick it off with my feet, but I'm really small in perspective. And then when the cap flies off, I fall into the bottle.
I remember seeing this,
and I'm
yes.
kind of drowning, and then I have a friend pick it up, the cameraman, and drop it, and
you fall
water
out.
Goes everywhere.
I remember seeing this, yeah.
So like that video, we talked about it in the morning. It was just like, hey, the water bottle or the bottle cap challenge is happening. We got to do something. We start filming. And the key for us is to get into blocking. You can be in your head so much when you're writing an idea. And especially if you have even just 4 people in a room, everyone has a slightly different version or a different idea of that what it should be. And unless you're with a camera and like acting it out and blocking it, you're not really, there's a point where you don't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so it's, the idea isn't sharpening. So we just jump outside and that's our go-to.
Just practice
like
it.
Our really. Phrase is like, let's get into blocking. Let's move from like the table to like doing it because we're going to get nowhere.
You kind of write it on the fly almost.
And so we block it. And I remember that the one that, I'll never forget that video because we had a kombucha drink that was just in the fridge. And we're like, let's throw it in. And a kid comes at one of our team members is like, well, you know what would make this even better is like GT's kombucha was just trending last week for this video that Cody Ko did, and that's the true kombucha. Like, we should get that because people will talk about that more than even this trend, which ended up being the case.
So you went and bought a bottle.
He went to the store. We put GT Dave's in, and it was last minute. Like, he barely got it in there. We shot the thing. We posted it that night or the next morning, and then GT Dave called us and was like, hey, one, we're sending you we're stocking your studio fridges with kombucha. But also that was like super cool. Thank you. Let's do something in the future. But those videos, you know, they happen fast. It's like we get all hands on. If we have all of us doing it, we can get it done in 2 days.
It's almost like you need a business sponsorship salesperson who's with you, who's like calling the owner of the brand saying, we're about to do this video.
Yeah.
Do you want us to keep the label in or take the label out? and here's the rate.
Yeah.
You know, something like
we're about to call this other beverage company.
Yeah, exactly.
We've done that in the past, and we've talked about that. It's actually a little
unorganic.
Well, no, it's not organic. It can be organic. Like, that one was super. A lot of people saw it. My friends called me and were like, "How much did you get paid for that?" And I was like, "Oh, it wasn't an ad." Like, but it was so front and center. Like, it should have been an ad. But it's the internet moves too quick for brand deals to get made on the fly. There does need to be an agency that does that. Like, they have it ready to go. Like, they're just waiting for the trend to happen, and they have a client. They just need the connection, and the contract's already in place. That's the problem. Is by the time you do that, and then you get other. I love brand deals because they pay the bills, but you also need to meet their like.
Well, you need to say stuff. It this way. You need to put the bottle here. And
sometimes you get on a call and there's 10 other creatives from their team.
Oh my gosh.
Giving the ideas.
And you're like, get out of here.
It just slows down the process.
Yeah.
And it can taint the idea from, especially those trends. They need to be like your fresh idea, untainted.
If brands understood that they need to trust the creator and just say, we trust you, make it great, do your best, and have like one stipulation or something, you could probably create a much better video.
Those are always the best videos. I mean, I had Coca-Cola approached me years ago. It was one of my first brand deals. And they're like, what do you want to do? Like, what can we help you do with finances that you can't do now? And I was like, fly. Like, I've always wanted to hire the Iron Man stunt team and fly. And you know what? We'll just say Coca-Cola made me fly by putting Coke on my feet and shaking it and like opening it or a Coke and Mentos thing.
And then upside down
and flying. And they were like, sweet. We'll hire the stunt team and we'll pay you. And so... That is the best, and that video has been seen over a billion times on various platforms. It's been copied everywhere. And you're right, it's genius because they just need to say, like, here's what you're great at doing. We're going to provide finances to go next step, the direction you want to go, and that's kind of it. But it is limiting to, like, the amount of brands that you can work with because that level of budget is, they need to be just for general awareness. It can't be, like, a call to action.
No.
Link in bio to sign up for whatever.
Brand awareness. What's the biggest lesson your wife's taught you about being a better creator?
She's taught me a lot of lessons. And she's probably going back to your question about how you stay humble during a rise of fame. Like, that's the only thing I can attribute to, you know, her keeping me grounded and family and friends. And she's taught me so many things. But one is really just to not go numb to the journey. There's a lot of things, whether you're traveling and you're used to the speaking tour or whatever, meet and greets, and you've probably done the meet and greets, mm-hmm. where you do 300 people in 2 hours, and it's like, by the end, you're a robot, you're saying the same things, and then you catch yourself when you say the thing and they didn't even ask you that question. And she's taught me to really be present, and like, every person that's meeting you has a need. They obviously think they're your friend, but it's really your moment to like talk to them about them, whether it's 30 seconds or a minute. Like, be present. Don't go to the robot version of meet and greet Zach.
She seems very emotionally intelligent.
She is. I have none, so she has to be over capacity.
Where do you think you'd be without her? Or if you were a creator who was more single in the last 7 years?
I'd probably be doing a lot of the same stuff, but family life would feel very empty. I don't think I would be. She's pushed me to challenge. Like, she's kind of the voice of like, hey, we have an extra room. Like, what are we doing? Mm. Like, we could be doing more. She's the push of that. You know, where I get pretty content with like, oh, work's going. I'd probably be somewhere like, work's going well. I'm just grinding still, single, Zach, if I hadn't met her.
Yeah.
But she continues to push to the deeper purpose of life. In the areas of, it's great to be famous. She'll question like, what are you doing with it? Like, whether it's the one-on-one interactions or when you're speaking or being more present with people, what are you doing with that?
Yeah, the impact you're making with it. Mm-hmm. What do you want people to really think about you, about your work? When they see your work, what do you want them to think about?
I want them to be taken back to that spot. Like, I have a vivid memory of as a kid going, I was visiting Boston and, just going about life, but kind of uninspired for a little bit of time, and seeing a guy, it was the goofiest costume, but he had a hat on, and he was obviously just ducked like this, you know, but his hat was floating. It looked like he had no face, and it was like the Invisible Man, and I was just mesmerized, and he was doing magic too, like without looking, or he had no head. It looked like an invisible guy doing magic, And I remember getting that dose of inspiration. And so that when people watch my work, that is the number one goal, is that they feel inspired and hopefully take it into whatever they're doing. You know, it can be a business person watching it and they go, it's like a perspective shift, which is funny because we do a lot of, you know, forced perspective mm-hmm. stuff, which is kind of on the nose. But it is that, like, looking at the world differently and taking a new path that next day. You know, that's hopefully people can find and tap into their, you know, it's like the ratatouille, everyone can cook. Like, I really think everyone has a creative bone in their body. It's just how much they've used that muscle mm-hmm. and how much they've tapped it and trained it. And also following that curiosity to go actually execute an idea based off of what you may have a question about.
I've always been fascinated by artists because I never was good at art or like painting or all these things. So I just love watching it. I love appreciating it. And I'll dabble a little bit here and there just for myself. But I look at myself as an artist in the sports field or as an interviewing artist.
Yeah.
It's like, how can I use creativity in the thing that I'm good at and make it art?
Yeah.
So whatever that is for you, like, bring your creativity out in the world. It doesn't have to be video making or art.
Yep.
But you can make something art. Which
I'm not an artist in the sense of I can't do storyboards for the life of me either. Like, I try to sketch out. It's like probably my biggest problem is, like, if I could have one gift bestowed upon me by the muse, it'd be like to make me a beautiful pencil artist and being able to at least draw a storyboard frame with the nose, like, looking the correct direction. And, you know, but I think too many people limit art and artistry and say it applies to only painting or only filmmaking or writing, but it's every craft can have an art to it.
I 100% agree. And what is your biggest fear right before you launch a video? Is your biggest fear that it will fail and it won't do as well as you think, that it'll succeed beyond your wildest dreams and be the biggest thing ever, or that everyone will judge and criticize it? Failure, success, or judgment and criticism? Which one's strongest for you, hurt or you're afraid of the most?
The biggest fear when I hit publish is that my last one, not as good, but is that the last, there was a period too where I really was believing that I'm gonna be out of ideas. Like, we're 2,000 of these short videos in. Really, is there any more than that? Like, or are we just gonna do more of the same thing and mix it up a little bit? And for me, when I post, not much anymore, but, you know, because we're planned out for 3 weeks or 4 weeks, so I know there's more, but, like, it's in the writing room now. It's when we send it off to production and then I have to sit there with my team and we're thinking of the next idea. There's always a moment of, like, was there anything as good as that last one, though? Because we just did, like, a banger, and that was, we felt it as we made it, and then we might have just been drained. And that's where even longevity of the business, you think, how long can this go before I run out of ideas?
Yeah, if I'm not creating hits, is any brand going to want to pay me? And then I'm not going to pay my team and continue going.
Yep.
Interesting. Is it a banger? It's almost like you need an idea person, just full time, who can come up with ideas.
Yeah, we have a writing team and we are always coming up with ideas. But you can tell when the idea is good enough to, like, we're raising the bar too a little bit. Not every time, but every couple months, we're slowly raising the bar. And it's, are we gonna, the new fear is kind of, can we continue to top it at this level? You know, is it?
Or are we going backwards?
At the end of this, are we gonna have to be building, like, sets on Mars to be really impressing people?
Right. Going in outer space, yeah. Hanging out with Elon Musk up there, yeah.
Which would be cool, and that, I gotta put that on the bucket list then.
Mars.
Vine on Mars.
Interesting, that could be good. How can we support you the most right now? What's the thing that you're inspired by the most that you're doing?
I'm most inspired by, really inspired by family life. Mm-hmm. By figuring out, we're just about to open our home again to foster care.
Wow.
Which is, we had a break once we had our biological son, Liam, because we were trying to figure out, like, what is life with two kids while doing the rest of our life? And so we stabilized the aircraft there, and now it's, Let's jump into foster care again, maybe, and two, by the end of this year, I can see us, or next year, going in with older kids. We haven't tried that. We haven't had, I want some more training in that first to figure out how to talk about what they're going through with them, because it's a little easier with babies because they're not going to tell you all their issues.
Yeah.
They'll give you a little warning sign with crying, but, like, I don't know what it's like to talk to a four-year-old and explain why their parents, they can't live with their parents.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to develop what that, and we're trying to figure out our home situation. Like, what would it look like to have a really safe sanctuary for our kids? Like, is there a version of living on a farm where you could have a bunch of rooms over time, learn to have a bigger capacity of kiddos?
That's cool.
Like, I always love movies like Cheaper by the Dozen, and I was always inspired. I have a family friend up in Oregon. They have 10 kids. That's a crazy amount of kids, and I don't want 10 kids right now. But I always loved the energy of it. I loved that there was older kids helping younger kids, mm-hmm. and just it was just a really fun vibe. And so for me, that would be the dream, is figuring out, especially with my wife, like, how can we create a safe sanctuary where really, whether you're a teenage mom, maybe you're raising even a kid in our home, and we're helping teach that, or we have a baby or a bunch of kiddos, how do you make it safe for them and give that, like, every kid deserves a safe childhood. It just feels wrong that it's possible that kids can't have that.
Yeah.
And so is there a version of, it's kind of like, my creativity always goes to filmmaking, and now I've lately been applying, you know, even Yes And is like the most basic thing we start in writing a new concept. It's like, we always start, meeting one is Yes And, like, let's blue sky it. So doing that with family, not just my entertainment business, but it's, what's our family? Yes And, like, how cool could this be?
How can you evolve it? And for people that are listening or watching who might have who might be connected to what you're saying, who've been thinking about fostering, what recommendation do you have for them? Or are there any resources they could check
out? Look up an agency in your area. Mm-hmm. I think it's really helpful to not go directly with the government, but go through an agency, because they'll help guide you and be a little bit of a filter to the process.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me and my wife, it's really simple, and we adore people like Mother Teresa, who really just saw an issue and helped. It wasn't like, there wasn't a huge thought process. It wasn't like, let's really map this out for 18 years, and what's this going to look like, and how is this going to impact? Like, it's not as hard as people think. It's really, you can give your home space to a kiddo,
yeah.
And if you're up for raising a kid at this point, and if you have a year of time window that you can be open for, like,
because you can do it for 6 months, a year, a couple of years.
Yeah.
Right.
You can. There's a bunch of options.
Like, how many foster kids are there in the USA?
In the US, there's last that I read was, it's always a lag by a couple of years, but it's over 600,000 foster kiddos in the US. I know LA has 30,000 and only 9,000 or 10,000 beds. Mm. And so the rest have to be in group homes or go to extra family, or it's kind of messy.
Yeah. A lot of kids that need some support, that's for sure. I want to ask this question. We're getting towards the end here. This is called the Three Truths.
Three Truths.
So I'd like you to imagine it's your last day on Earth many, many years from now, and you've accomplished all your dreams. You've got 30 kids in foster care. You've got farms of kids. You've got all the films you've wanted to make, like everything, you've done it. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to the last day, and for whatever reason, you've got to take all of your creative work with you. All of your videos got to go to the next place, wherever that is. So no one has access to this interview, your books, or any of your creative work. Mm-hmm. But you get to leave behind three lessons that you've learned from your life that you would share with us.
So all history of me is erased, and now I'm leaving the last podcast, right?
The three things you know to be true about life that you'd want to leave behind and share with other people. Mm. Three lessons. So put yourself in that hypothetical situation.
Yes.
What would you say would be those three truths for you?
The three truths: you have to be full of grace. You got to be graceful to people. I think everybody could use a little bit more grace. Even driving here, I was so mad at this one guy who just cut me off. And I was like, you know what? I don't know what his day is like, but it's like, he needs grace and he doesn't need my judgment. Like, I'm okay. So it's, and maybe that needs to be one of them, is judge less. Like, I'm always, if the one thing I'm lacking is, like, I'm constantly judging myself,
really?
But also people. Yeah. Like, it's so easy to do. And just judge people less. I think everyone, you have, it's even in the Bible, right? Like, get the log out of your own eye before you talk about the speck in somebody else's eye. The other one is, and this is the one I like will tell my kids, but my wife's, my mother-in-law, she always says, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. And I would say, invest in great people around you, like, and try to pick up on that. Like, you could probably ask yourself, like, who are the three best people that I should be around for as long as possible? And and soak up with them and just surround yourself. I think it makes a huge difference, like, who you surround yourself with.
Absolutely. That's a big personal growth saying. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So
yeah, that's good.
Invest in people for sure. How can we connect to you online? What's the best place? TikTok?
You can search. It's whatever your jam is. Yeah. We may be, if you have any social media account, we're probably there. But just Google my name and you can.
They're probably already following you. There's 80 million people that follow you already. So Zach King everywhere, right? It's the same name everywhere? Yeah. I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Zach, because you have had such an interesting life and the fact that you constantly show up for yourself. You show up and you just take the next step of creativity. You have an idea, let me try this out and see if it works. And maybe some things work and they don't, but you keep moving forward. And I really want to acknowledge you for your heart, because I think it takes a special heart for someone to want to adopt, foster, and keep thinking about kids who don't have a quality family life. And I know you grew up with a pretty quality family life. And I think it takes a great man to think that way and open your heart and truly want to help as many kids as possible. So I really acknowledge you for that.
Thank you.
That gift that you have. Just more so than the video work, which is amazing talent, but the gift to want to help young kids, I think is really inspiring. So I acknowledge you for that, man. And I want to see you make a film in the next couple of years. I want to be at the premiere.
Don't give me that pressure. Not a couple of years. We'll say
the next 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
Okay. No pressure.
Yeah.
But I want to see it happen.
Yeah.
Whenever is right for you. So within 10 years, can you commit before 2030?
We can, we can probably work on that.
Okay, good. I want to see the film, The Dark Side of Magic, or whatever you want to call it. I won't take the credit for that, but, you know, it's a good idea. And my final question for you is, what is your definition of greatness?
Oh, definition of greatness. To me, I look at the resilience of so many kiddos who've gone through hard lives, teenagers, adults, who've gone through trauma. Greatness is the resilience and coming back from that trauma and just going down the journey of healing. Doesn't mean you get fully healed, but that you work, you're ambitious towards some sort of healing. Those are the people I look up to who I'm like, how did you come from this family life and turn out the way you did? It's just incredible.
Yeah.
The resilience. So I think greatness is having an incredible capacity of that resilience.
And have you, what's the thing you've had to heal the most in your life?
You know, I think a lot of it is proving. I grew up in a family where it's very performance-based. And, you know, similar to your story where, you know, for me, it was piano. When I look back at why I love film, when I was 4 years old watching Jurassic Park, and I wanted to, when I was seven, I got my hands on the camera, I would play those films for my family. And just kind of recently, in the last couple of years, I realized what I loved about showing that work to my family was the gratification of them saying, good job.
Good job. Like, the validation.
I was earning, but I loved the craft, you know? There was I loved doing the thing, but then the extra special moment, the reason I gathered the family on Friday night to play it on the big screen for us was at the very end when they would say, good job. Or when it was like, oh, but you could work on this, it was kind of like a bummer and I could, you know, I was only doing those premieres for the good job. And that's a dangerous place to do your work for the praise of others, because I think it'll lead down some very uncreative places and just, it's not gonna be your best work either. And it also is not lasting. Like, you can't sustain yourself over a career just always looking for, when I post it, people love it, you know?
Yeah.
So the healing is learning. It's not about these surface level achievements. It's about being over your life, a person who's putting good into the world in whatever way that looks like. It can look like being a nurse, can look like creating movies, but
Zach King in the house. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for being here, bro.
Thanks for having me.
My friend, thank you so much for being here. And a big thank you to Zach King for sharing his wisdom, opening his heart, and teaching us some practical things that we can do to become better creators and better human beings. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Make sure to tag Zach King over on Instagram or Twitter or YouTube or wherever you're listening to this and you share it out. Make sure to tag him when you share out stories on Instagram and all that other good stuff. And tag me as well to let me know that you're listening to this or watching this. Also, would love it if you click that subscribe button over on Apple Podcasts. When you do that, it truly helps spread the message to more people when you click subscribe. and when you leave a review. We'd love to hear your feedback, thoughts of how this inspired you, helped you, and improved your life. So click the review button, leave a review, and click that subscribe button as well. If you want to continue to support me and the mission of spreading greatness to more people, that would be amazing. And if you want inspirational quotes and messages from me every single week to your phone, then text me right now the word podcast to 614-350-3960. And I want to leave you with this quote from Charlie Chaplin, who said, "You'll never find a rainbow if you're looking down." I'm telling you, if there's anything I can learn about this, and Zach, I've been following his videos for years, the guy is always looking up. He's thinking. He's creative. He's always got some wonder and awe and thinking, how can I bring joy to people in this moment? Think about what you can do in this moment to bring joy to someone in your life, and then go do it. I'm so grateful for you. And if no one has told you lately, you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
At Metro, get an iPhone 12 with 5G and a dual camera system for $99.99. Take amazing pictures and share them instantly. And don't put up with life's yada yada.
Yada yada.
Like photo bombers. Zoom, crop out,
yada yada,
and bye.
You don't take yada yada in life, don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Get iPhone 12 with 5G with no activation fees and nada yada yada. Only at Metro by T-Mobile. Switch Metro, bring your ID. This offer isn't available for customers currently at T-Mobile or that have been with Metro in the past 180 days.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.